So today we are starting our last of our lessons, and we're looking at Judas. Judas, the name comes from Judah. He was from the southern part of the kingdom, and he was from the town Kerioth. So it was Judas Iscariot. He was Judas from Kerioth. So he was. That was the way they named people. I would be Tom Kosciuszko if I'd lived over there then, because that was where I was born. That's the way they did the names back then. All right. But he was the only apostle not from the northern part, Galilee. He was an outsider. He was the only southern boy with a bunch of Yankees, or he was the only Yankee with a bunch of southern boys. Either way you want to look at it. He didn't exactly fit in with the group. We don't know how he became a disciple. We don't know if he started out following John the Baptist. We don't know if he was attracted to Jesus himself. So we don't know about his call to be an apostle. All we really know is, though, that he seems to have had a particular interest. He was a thief. He was the bookkeeper of the bunch. He was the guy who cooked the books. He stole from money given to, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But he had, if you know of somebody who's had somebody embezzle money from them, that was a Judas act, okay? He appears, and I'm going to go ahead and steal, because we don't have tons of time today, go ahead and give you my presentation of what I think was going on with Judas. Judas, in any time you have a listing of the apostles, he is listed next to or with one who was a zealot. He became a follower of Jesus because it was functional for him to do so. Now, I'm sorry, but we can use that little criteria for people who join the church today. How many people join because it's functional to join? How many? When I was in seminary, I had a classmate who was a vice president with a shoe company. And they had a standard policy in the shoe company when they would send somebody out. When you move to a new town, find out the most influential church in town and join it. It was functional to be a part of the best, biggest, most influential church. Well, that's sort of what Judas was. He started out to accomplish something. He had a, shall we say, an ulterior motive in being a follower of Jesus. Now, we remember mainly two things about him. We remember the fact that he betrayed Christ. And we also remember the fact that he committed suicide. He hung himself. Now, that's sort of the things that stand out as we think about him. He was the treasurer of the apostles. Now, where did they get their money, by the way? Well, reading from Luke chapter 8. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary called Magdalene, from whom seven demons had come out. Joanna, the wife of Cusa, the manager of Herod's household. Susanna and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. We still find the same thing today. In churches that I have been in the past, I'm thinking of one, and the person who tended to give the most was a female in that congregation. Women tend to be more tender-hearted in terms of support. And in this particular situation, this group of females provided money for Jesus and his disciples to make it. And that's just the way it is, and I don't think anything wrong with that. I think that's a wonderful thing. But he was the treasurer of the apostles. John chapter 12. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. This is where some money had been spent to buy some expensive perfume, to bathe his feet and wash with hair, etc., etc. He said, objective, why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. Now, what would be a year's wages in today's world? Probably in the, it wouldn't be minimum wage. It would probably be in that $50,000, $60,000 range, though. Lower middle class, somewhere in that range. But let's just pull that number out of the air. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Okay. He scammed. He pulled money out. And it was a known fact that he did. He liked to take a little bit out of the purse as he was going along. Now, some major passages. We do understand, we're told in Scripture, people can disagree if they wish, but that Jesus knew from the beginning who was going to betray him. He had knowledge of who the person was that was going to set him up. John chapter 6, verse 61 to 71, he knew from the beginning which did not believe and who would betray him. In Matthew, we have another little interesting passage. This is where we have Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot listed. Chapter 10. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First Simon, who is called Peter, and his brother Andrew, James the son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. He's paired with the Zealot. Y'all work with Boy Scouts any? Girl Scouts? If you go on a camp out, isn't it amazing how kids sort of pair up? And kids sort of pair up according to who likes what they like. Hey, I had my buddy in high school. We paired up because we liked similar things. So Marsh Richards, who's a principal of the school over in Vicksburg, but he and I grew up together, but he was my buddy. Moved to Yazoo City and made buddies with him. Kids pair up. Adults do the same thing. You hang with the people who got a similar interest to what you have. Judas typically is mentioned with the Zealot. Okay, now, let's suppose for the moment that I'm right. We don't know for sure, but suppose I'm right, okay? Then he wanted to be with somebody who he liked to sit around and talk while Jesus is giving a message. Hey, man, do you think he really means so-and-so? Yeah, I think he does. What? Y'all never do anything like that, I'm pretty sure. But they did, my assumption. The Zealot wanted the Romans thrown out. They wanted someone to be on the throne of Israel. They wanted someone to reestablish the kingdom of David and of Solomon. After the war between the states, we had nothing to be proud of except who we were. Remember? So we didn't have anything down this way. And if you've got the old family records in your house, like we got at my house, you know, remember I told you about, I got my wife's great-granddaddy's Bible that he carried in the Civil War. So we got all these traditions that go on. When you don't have anything, you long for something. Why is it these Mississippi people want to go out and do stuff, you know? Because we have a drive. Why did Simon the Zealot want to overthrow the Romans? He had a drive. Why did Judas want to overthrow the Romans? He had a drive. He saw Jesus as potentially having the power to do what needed to be done, to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish. Pause now. I go back to my deal. It was a utilitarian relationship. He joined because, it appears, he joined because he was going to get accomplished what he wanted to get accomplished. In the meantime, he also got to make have some income from the money that the women gave, too. But he got to visualize or think about, those D Romans. He hated them. And, you know, in the South, what did we say about Yankees? We said the same thing, okay? Well, he had that sort of feeling about the Romans. The Zealots did. Whether he did or not, we don't have it specifically stated, but if the assumption carries through, he had that same attitude. Now, so he wanted to have things happen. He wanted certain things to be accomplished. We find this mentioning So he's making money, stealing it. He's having the fantasy of being able to overthrow Rome. He wishes Jesus would do what he's supposed to do, what he has the power to do. He wanted some results. See, I'm giving away my position, aren't I? I'm saying that Judas Iscariot was not so much a believer in Jesus as much as he was someone who wished Jesus to do what he wanted him to do. And if that's the case, he was a manipulator trying to accomplish what he wanted using the means available to him. Now, that is my position about what's going on with him. Now he... Remember at the Last Supper, they're eating, and Judas is there, and Christ leans over and says something to him, "What thou doest, do quickly," the old King James translation. And at that point, Judas gets up and leaves the room, and we are told that everybody just sort of thought that that was what Judas did because he had the money bag. Well, to read to you John 13. "And after he said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, 'I tell you the truth, one of you is going to betray me.' His disciples stared at one another." I remember one time in class, a teacher said, "One of y'all cheated on your test." Have you ever had anything like that happen? Now, I didn't cheat on the test on that particular occasion. I had not done it. But you wonder, what does she know? So everybody looks at, "Did you do it?" Well, that's sort of what happened here. They stared at one another. "One of you cheated on the test." And that's the picture. His disciples stared at one another at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter motioned to the disciple and said, "Ask him which one it is." Which one he means. Leaning back against Jesus, he asked him, "Lord, who is it?" And Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." Then dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, son of Simon. As soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. And then the quote, "What you're about to do, do quickly," Jesus told him. But no one at the meal understood why Jesus said this to him. Since Judas had charge of the money, some thought Jesus was telling him to buy what was needed for the feast or to give something to the poor. As soon as Jesus had taken the bread, he went out, and it was night. That's all we know. Now, did Judas think that finally Jesus is coming around? It's all stacked against us. The only option left is for Jesus to stand up, take charge, throw the Romans out, and by George, we're going to get it done now. I happen to believe that he had some of those thoughts. If he had the zealot mindset, if he had the mindset of overthrowing the Romans, if he had the mindset of making things to be different, and if he was trying to accomplish what he wanted to, and if his heart had nothing to do with righteousness or serving God, it had to do with getting rid of the Yankees, getting rid of the Romans, the occupiers. Then he said, "What I must do, do it quickly." He's given me permission. So he goes, sets it up, because you see, the problem was, by the way, if you've been seeing all the PR stuff on the Son of God, the new movie that's going to be coming out right away, I mean, like, it's blitzing everywhere right now. Well, it'd be interesting to see what it's like. It looks like it might have the same kind of carryover that the Passion of the Christ had. Who knows? But when you watch these movies, do you realize that everybody in the movie sort of looks alike? How many women in here have on the same outfit? How many men in here have on the same outfit? You know, if you wanted to say something to somebody, you could say, "The guy with the greenish tie is the one teaching." Okay? Yeah, I could be identified by the way I'm dressed. You couldn't do that then. They all wore... By the way, they didn't have a Bensinger's laundry, okay? They didn't have somebody pick them up and drop them off at the house and all that good kind of stuff. They wore the same robe over and over and over. You couldn't even get downwind. So if you wanted to pick Jesus out of the crowd, he's the guy with the long hair. No, because everybody's got long hair. He's the guy with the beard. No, because everybody's got a beard. He's the guy with the everybody's got on the same kind of robe. He's the one with the kind of, no, he doesn't have a special kind of. How do you know which one is Jesus? Not only how do you know in terms of looks, but if it's at nighttime, how do you know which one's Jesus? He didn't have the halo around his head. He didn't have that kind of stuff going on. He's just out there. There's just a bunch of people out there. By the way, the priest would look really, really bad with the people if they got the wrong guy and got back to the temple and he said, gotcha, wrong one. Because all the people liked Jesus. They thought he stood up for the poor. They need somebody to identify who he is. And so when Judas goes, they were thrilled. They love it that he's done it because they can get him at night. It's going to be dark. There's not many people around. We're going to get him and pull him in here and have a trial. And the folk won't even know about it until we're done with it. And hand him over to the Romans and they'll take care of it. It's going to be a done deal. Good. Notice the role that Judas plays in that thinking. If I'm right. I could be wrong, but if I'm right, he allows them a sure bet. Now remember, how did he identify Jesus? He didn't shake hands with him. He kissed him on the cheek. Now some cultures do that kind of stuff. I'm not a Frenchie myself, but you know, they do that kind of thing. So that's not, it's not, doesn't mean they were gay, is what I'm trying to say. But it simply was a way to make sure the one I go up and give the kiss on the cheek, he's the dude. Now, the facts we see laid out, what I'm trying to look at are the motivations that are laid out for us. And I'm trying to say Judas was not doing all this because he wanted the angels of heaven to come down and all people to be righteous and holy in God's sight. My position is he was doing it because he wanted to get rid of the Yankees / the Romans. He wanted the old system set back up again. Now, I could be wrong, but it appears that this is going on. Now, Jesus knew. Remember, he was willing to identify himself, but they didn't trust the self-identification. Who are y'all looking for? We're looking for Jesus, the one who calls himself the Christ. I am he. Then they talk some more and said, who are you looking for? We're looking. I told you I am the guy. This is all taking place now. So it's laid out. Okay, so here we go. Remember also, Peter has a solution to the whole problem. He pulls out his sword, so John tells us. Then Simon Peter, verse 10 of chapter 18 of John. Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servants, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? Christ is on target. He's on focus. He knows what's going to happen. He's got it laid out. No, we're not going to fight a battle here, Peter. Put the sword up. This is not the time to engage. Even if it's a smaller crowd and we got a chance of beating them, although you're the only one with a sword in the crowd on my side, and they got swords on theirs and sticks and everything else, no, we're not going to do that right now. But they have been brought to this point, and Judas is the one who has set this whole thing up. Now, we know that Jesus is condemned to death. There's a bad situation. And when Jesus does not do what Judas thought he was going to do, Judas crashes. Reading from Matthew chapter 27. When Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 silver coins to the chief priest and the elders. I have sinned, he said, for I have betrayed innocent blood. What is this to us? They replied. That's your responsibility. Judas threw the money into the temple and left, and he went away and hanged himself. Now, two steps back from what I just read. Just think it through. He doesn't say, I have betrayed my Savior. He doesn't say, I have betrayed the Son of God. He doesn't say, I have betrayed the only hope that human beings have to overcome sin. He doesn't say, I can't believe I misunderstood the purpose of God in this whole process. I can't believe I betrayed my Savior. There could have been 100 different things he could have said. But what does he say? So the record is right here. I have betrayed innocent blood. You see, when Jesus is condemned to die and is in the control of the Jewish leaders, they're going to give him to the Romans, and the Italians were the ones who killed him. So this whole process is going on here. When all this has happened, it's not who I thought he was. He's not going to overthrow the... I have betrayed innocent blood. It's not that I betrayed my Savior. I betrayed innocent blood. He's not who I thought he was. In my book, that's what he's saying. And he tries to give the money back. They won't take it because it's blood money. He throws it, runs out. By the way, we also read that... let's see here. Reading in Acts chapter 1, Peter is preaching, verse 18. It's a sort of a parenthesis statement. Well, let me back up just a little bit before that. But through the mouth of David concerning Judas, who served as guide for those who arrested Jesus, he was one of our number and shared in this ministry. With the reward he got for his wickedness, Judas bought a field. There he fell headlong, his body burst open, and his intestines spilled out. Everyone in Jerusalem heard about this, and they called this, in their language, the field of blood. Okay. Now, we got two statements here. The 30 pieces of silver, supposedly, he threw back. But he had also used monies. I don't know that he kept a special... Do y'all have any old coins you keep at your house? I do. My father-in-law's daddy owned a little store in Griffin, Georgia. And he would collect old silver coins when they came through. So we got some interesting coins from him. So they're a special little bag of coins. I don't mix those in with everything else. I keep those separately. Anybody got any Morgan silver dollars? Oh, come on, admit it. Anybody here got some more? Oh, soul brother, thank you there. But at least somebody's got some more. I have some, okay? I don't know that I have enough to retire on or that if the economy crashes, I'm going to... No, none of that stuff. I just like them, okay? Now, having said that, you keep special coins in a special place. But if you just have money, you commingle your money. Now, he's been slipping money out of the bag for who knows how long. He has used monies to buy a field. He's like everybody else. If you embezzle money, you do something with it. Most folk, I had a client in Memphis who had a secretary who embezzled about $1 million a year for 10 years. That's a lot of money. You'd think that you could retire to Switzerland on that, you know? This particular lady blew it all. She didn't have anything. She's in prison right now. But see, Judas has been collecting the money, and he gets his 30 pieces of silver. He's got all of his money. And so but he's also bought this field over here, and he's got an investment going on the side in case things don't go well. So he's got his investment on the side, and he's got this over here. So he takes the money, and he's going, I'm going to return 30 pieces of silver. I don't know that he had them in the bag marked, given to me by the priest to be returned in case of things don't go well. But I think he took 30 pieces of silver and said, please take this. He commingled everything. By the way, wouldn't it be a pretty smart thing to do to buy some land if you thought somehow the kingdom of Israel is going to be restored and the Romans are going to be kicked out and we're going to have a building program like we haven't had for centuries? Wouldn't that be a smart investment to do? It would be sort of like if you had a real idea where the interstate's going to go. Wouldn't you want to buy that corner? That's what Judas was doing. He's taking care of number one. He bought a field. He saw an investment deal. But then Jesus did do what he's supposed to. And he's not going to overthrow the Romans. So he takes the money back and throws it. And he goes out to his property. And when the Great Depression hit, I'm old enough, I was born in 40. So So I heard all the stories, okay? When the Great Depression hit, how many people jumped off buildings? You know, somebody had bought a high rise and they paid something down on it and they couldn't make the payment, they're going to lose the whole deal. They would go up to the top and jump off. Mm-hmm. Judas goes to his piece of property and hangs himself. Who knows how long he was there? But what we do know that is after some period of time, the body fell down and was decayed enough so that his body burst open. But the point is, he went to the field where he had everything going. That was his investment. This is going to be my chance to make it big. When Jesus sets it up, I'm going to have the corner locked. But he couldn't do it. So he killed himself. Okay, person. Who was who in the Bible makes this statement about Jesus? Several possible explanations for why he did what he did. Satan entered Judas. We have that clearly stated. The fact that Satan enters somebody, though, doesn't mean that explains all their bad behavior, by the way, just for the record. I don't think that Judas got to heaven, ready to go to the gate, and St. Peter said, wait over here now, because, you know, we got to judge you when we judge Satan, because he's the one who made you do what you did. I don't believe that. I happen to believe that people are responsible for what they do. I don't care what their diagnosis is. And I think we all have a sense of responsibility for what we do. Of course there are extremes. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not talking about somebody who's psychotic and doesn't know what can't tell up from down. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about the functional person in life. Did he do it for the money? Perhaps he was known to want money. That could be a part of it. Was he trying to force Jesus into asserting and assuming, making the process happen? I think that's probably more of it. Did he really think Jesus was the Messiah? He thought he was the Messiah who was going to overthrow and reestablish the kingdom of David. Yes. Upset over apparent indifference that Jesus had to the law, possibly. The zealots wanted the law put back in place. They wanted the people to be judged by the Old Testament canon, so that if you take too many steps on the Sabbath day, you get punished for it. A legalistic approach to religion. Legalism doesn't give salvation. Christ came to bring salvation. Anyway, possibility of any of those things taking place. He probably felt like an outsider. He felt like a zealot. He was one of the few. He had one buddy, but they were trying to take care of the bad stuff and make things better for all the Jewish people. Probably had some sense of confidence. He is, and one passage says that he was not afraid of the Sadducees or the Pharisees. He was good at detail, so he got named to take care of, you know, people somehow or another. If you're an obsessive compulsive person, now everybody thinks you ought to be the secretary at the group you're in because you take good notes. That's just one of those things. Evidently, he took good notes, i.e., he took good care of the money. Well, they just didn't know he was skimming. He was opinionated. He had no trouble condemning the woman because she wasted all that money. Wouldn't you feel sort of bad if somebody had $50,000 that they could give to missions or something, but they're going to spend it on some air fragrance to use in the church? I don't know that we need $50,000 worth of fresh air in the church, okay? And that's sort of the way he looked at things. All right. Galilean, get the money, a thief, diagnostic impression. There's an old personality diagnosis that we don't really use anymore because we have to be thoughtful of all these people. We can't use a whole bunch of things we used to use. One that we used to use was called a sociopathic personality. Can't use that anymore. Sociopathic, a pathological view of the norms of society. The norms of society don't apply to me. A sociopath is one who thinks they are above the law, or they are above the common norm, whatever it happens to be. I was walking Saturday morning on Annandale Parkway. I do about a 6 mile run every Saturday morning. And these three guys in these pickups were over there talking, and they got through talking, and one of them just jumped in his pickup and cut across the median. Now, they just redid that stuff out there, you know, so the concrete curbs are beginning to crack. So he felt like he could just bounce his little old pickup, big old pickup, I should say. It was one of those humongous things, you know. He just drove over the meeting's about as wide as for me to the, not quite to the door, but, you know, so he just jumped it and run. And I said, what are you doing? He could go quarter of a mile and turn around, but I don't need to go down. I can jump the curb in my pickup because it'll go anywhere I want it to go. That's not sociopathic behavior necessarily, but it is saying that the normal rules of driving don't apply to me. Well, Judas, in my opinion, was a sociopathic personality. He had, no, we might use the term antisocial personality in today's world. But he also had, I hate to throw out this kind of garbage word, but delusions of grandeur. He assumed he's going to buy that corner lot when the interstate goes through. He's going to make a killing on that thing. And he's going to be a part of the right hand of God and of Jesus. And he's going to do well. But the core diagnostic impression is a sociopathic personality. Now, was he responsible for what he did? Y'all may also have heard about the number one drug guy in Mexico got arrested over the weekend. He's worth $1 billion that he got in the drug trade. I would say he's a sociopathic personality. You know, the norms of society don't apply to him. Judas had some of the same feelings.